Hello, my name's Rob Seltzer and welcome to Exiled Eagles. Much like Nathaniel Klein, we Match Fitness, we're improving with each pod. Joining me today is recently released from his prison, Ned Rock, down in Melbourne. How's it feeling to be allowed out of your house, Ned?
Well, it's very exciting. Booked in the pub for the Wolves game at 7 a.m. Under the promise to the bloke who owns the pub that we would drink excessively at that time, and I'm pleased to confirm that I think we definitely made it worthwhile for an opening.
Which is good. I believe you said you mentioned you had a hangover by 4 p.m. which is a very good effort. Well done, mate.
That is true.
Well done indeed. We'll go north. We'll go up to Mark Werner, who gets better reception in his car than he does his house. So Mark joining us from his car again. You back outside the house you robbed last time, or are you moving on?
Man, I'm actually live from the ute again. Yes, correct. But I'm in a shopping centre car park at the moment with a warm old security bloke lurking around. I'm waiting for a tap on the window with a flashlight at any point in time. So if that happens, you'll know what that's all about.
Well, that's because you're masturbating in the ute. You're not supposed to do that in public.
I got my camera. Shit, sorry, mate.
down in the Shire, a very warm Dale Quarty. How are you, Dale?
I'm good, thanks. Hello.
Excellent stuff. Right. So last time we potted was after the Chelsea debacle. Since then, 4 games. We've won 2, drawn 1, lost 1. So not a bad return from that. So would you think that was par? Are you happy with the return of points? Would you wanted more? Would you expected more? So let's start with Dale. Well, I mean, how are you feeling over the last 4 games? Just taking it. We'll talk about performances in a bit. Taking the kind of return that we've got from it.
I just had to think what the games were. Actually, I couldn't remember.
So it was Brighton 1-0. Then we Brighton Wolves. Yep, and Leeds. Fulham.
Yeah. All right. So. And we've got 8 points. No, we've got 7 points, didn't it? 7 points. Yeah, I'll take it. Done. Why not? Happy with it. Can't complain. 7 points, isn't it?
Yep. I mean, when we spoke the last pod, when we looked at these fixtures, we wanted to be around about 20 points by Christmas. Otherwise, it's squeaky bum time. I'm well on course for that. Ned, what about you with the return from that? Would you expect it more? Were you expecting less, perhaps? Or are we bang on what you thought we'd probably get?
I think from those 4 fixtures, I don't think anyone can complain with the points tally. I don't think, in terms of the whole season so far, I don't think anyone can complain with the points tally, except for maybe Rob. But I'm sure he'll run us through that in a sec. Look, I think you got to look at it. You go Wolves, good side. Unfortunate not to get a result there. Brighton's a derby. Take the performance out of it. If you say you get a draw again in a derby, you sort of go, it's not the best, not the worst. Good win against Fulham and a fantastic win against Leeds. So, I mean, you got to look at that and go, well, we've beaten the teams we definitely should beat. Got a draw against the team that was going to be a tough game regardless. And we've lost to a team that is probably going to finish above us. So I don't think you can really look at those results just in terms of what we actually got out of it and go, well, that was horribly unexpected either way. But yeah, I think we've achieved what we should out of those from a results perspective. So no complaints here.
Yep. Mark, do you agree with that?
It's a decent return. 7 points from, you know, every 4 games is about par, and that sets us up for probably our best points total if we continue that trend. Obviously, we won't. In typical Palace fashion, though, you know, you look back, the thorn in that side out those 4 games is really the Brighton game for me. You know, and a lot of that's to do with the opposition being Brighton, that we took a lead and just didn't fucking hammer it out. We, that Palace thing of like, oh, we scored nice and early, there's no way we'll get this over the line. And 90th minute, managed to fuck that up royally. And if Dunk didn't get sent off in the 93rd minute, I reckon they would have got the chocolates, Brighton.
You reckon?
But points-wise, mate, I'm taking it all day long, yeah. 7 from 4, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, you can't argue with 7 from 12, can you? I mean, I suppose if you look at the results and look at the teams we played, you'd probably think maybe, if you didn't know, you'd probably think we beat Brighton and would have drawn with Leeds. You'd have probably taken that as well, the way the team started. So, a good points total. But I think kind of this, we're going to move that into now kind of what the next thing we're going to talk about, and that is the tactics. Obviously, it was a bone of contention last pod. We were talking about the fact that we didn't lay a glove on Chelsea, and myself and Ned, quite surprisingly, didn't agree with the way we were set up and played. And it was very similar against Brighton as well. I feel like we didn't really do much, but and it was very disappointing to see. Very, very disappointing. And Mark so eloquently touched on that in his thoughts there. One thing that was very pleasing, though, for me was with Leeds, and this is where, for me, it's slightly different, is that when with Eze in there, it was very fluid at the top. You'd have Wilf up top and Eze right, and Are You going left, and Towns in the middle, and those boys would just move around and rotate fluidly, and Leeds didn't have a clue what to do, and they all found space. Now, for me, if the 4-4-2 works, that's how it's going to work for me. I'm no football coach, I understand that, but watching the way we play against Leeds with that fluidity works a lot better than we have that rigid, stead 4-4-2, give it to Wilf, because it looked like we just give it to Wilf and hope. So, Ned, I'm going to start with you here, because you love to go into the deep dive of it. So, tactics-wise, I mean, did you see something different with the Leeds game? So, I felt there was a lot more pressing as well. Or is it exactly the same, just Leeds gave us more time? And Fulham, just being Fulham, they're not a great team, so we looked a bit better. Or was there slight technical changes in your view as well?
I think in terms of their actual tactical instruction, I don't think that has changed greatly. I think the personnel has changed. I think in terms of when you're playing against a side like Leeds, for us, they are actually, from a tactical perspective, our perfect matchup. Because if you look at what our tactics are set up to do, they're set up to, and we do quite well against those big six teams that try to dominate the ball and just absolutely tear us to shreds. And we defend that quite well, and then we hit those teams on the counter attack. Leeds try and play like a big team, quote unquote, but they're just not as good. So where we have that opportunity, and we do quite well against those big six teams on the counter attack, we have the same opportunity to do that against Leeds, but we didn't have to play through a Liverpool or a Manchester City. I mean, we've been practicing to play against teams that play like that in the Premier League, who are far better than Leeds are. So that was good. I think in terms of what you touched on there, that I do agree, but in terms of having Eze in the side, it did give us a bit more flexibility, I think, early in the season. Tactically, we were trying to sit and hit on the counter, but we didn't have the sort of, as you said, the fluidity and the alternative options. It has always been give it to Wilf, but if you've got that option, even if it's just one other player, you can keep the same tactics, but the opposition can't just go, right, well, we'll put literally every single one of our defenders on their one outlet, and that's them fucked, game over. There's no outlet. So I think being able to sort of have someone a little bit different was good there. I think Fulham, again, are one of those teams that they're trying to keep the ball, they're trying to move the ball, and aren't that good at it compared to some of the top teams. So I think they're two teams that we're set up to do well against. I even thought the Wolves game was an interesting one. I didn't think we were particularly bad in that game. We had four good goal-scoring opportunities. Obviously, had one just offside, clear penalty denied, a just offside penalty, and Scott there missed an absolute sitter. And at least one of them was before Wolves scored. So I think from a going forward perspective, we were, you know, we counted and we created enough chances to score enough goals to win a game. Unfortunately, defensively, which is usually where we're quite solid, we were awful in that first 20 minutes, and that was game over there. Brighton, as you spoke about the Chelsea game. Brighton was exactly the same as that second half of the Chelsea game, but it was a much more resolute defensive performance, but just absolutely nothing with the ball. But yeah, as I say, I think the tactical approach is the same, but I think as the players sort of are a bit different and the teams that we play against will sort of dictate a little bit how much success we have in being able to get out. And the teams that we've played in that little period definitely helped us do that. But yeah, the players coming in have also sort of helped that as well. But it's improving, and you know, which is a good thing. So I mean, yeah, keep going forwards, and hopefully we'll have less to complain about, Rob.
Well, I mean, I've got a couple of thoughts, but I mean, look, we'll come to it a bit later in a moment. Anyway, Mark, how have you felt watching the games? I mean, have you been enjoying them, that we're winning? But I mean, have you enjoyed the games the way we play? Have you noticed any tweaks, like tactical tweaks at all? Or is it very much a case of like same old, just different personnel with slightly different skill sets?
Yeah, I just want to go back to the Chelsea game very quickly. I know we spoke about it on the last pod. Ben Chilwell just makes me angry looking at him. There's something about that dude's face. Like, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I'm a pretty relaxed dude these days. Definitely a glover, not a fighter. But, man, I watch him play football, and all of a sudden I've got gritted teeth and clenched fists. It's something about that bloke's melon just doesn't agree with me. Conversely, that Werner fella for Chelsea, what a good-looking man he is. in any case, moving forward. Lamptey for Brighton. Dale, was he someone we were looking at one point? Did you say?
No, I just know. What I said was he should go and play for bloody Ghana.
Love it.
Yeah. $1.5 million, absolute class.
Yeah, no, he looks the goods. And maybe I'm showing my age here too, but he reminded me of the mum from Good Times as well. It's just his like little moustache or something, but as soon as I laid eyes on him, I went, this guy's dynamite. Anyway, I've been enjoying watching the games. Rob, to answer your question, had a bit of a bobble there with Brighton. The Wolves game, the scoreline was probably a bit of a red herring, as Ned pointed out. We had a couple of chances there. VAR stiffed us. I think of one with the PVA penalty offside. Wilf didn't even get a look in. Blatant penalty. And for commentators to say, well, that's a penalty with Wilfred Zaha, that's nailed on. Didn't get that. So a lot of things that could have changed that game easily, but we walk away 2-0 losers. And I know Ned got a lot of pelters on our WhatsApp group for going into defence of our defence previously and this and that. And I really wanted to help you out now, but geez, it was a good read there for a while, so I just let it play out. And then, yeah, you know, that was lucky to get away with that. If they had a bit more class about them, I think they probably would have drew that. But getting the points there, and then Leeds was fantastic to watch, you know. Two first-half goals that we haven't scored in forever, I don't think. Inside, you know, 22, 23 minutes. So that was a bit of a joy to watch. And yeah, Leeds, I thought they're going to do us, to be honest. I'm forever the optimistic person watching Palace. But yeah, I thought they were going to open us up, particularly losing 4-1 to Leicester on that Monday. I thought they'd be baying for blood. So to rack up four against them was pretty cool. Oddly enough, that Bamford, I don't know if it was the first or the second goal, that he got ruled offside for pointing, and that led him to being offside for whatever reason. As soon as he scored that, I thought, I bet he don't get that. I bet VAR pulls that up. Not because I'm some sort of genius that can spot these things. I just had an inkling, and that's what happened. And then, you know, we went on with it, and they didn't. So tactic-wise, it's nice to see us changing up a little. We lost our shape in defence a couple of times in those last a few games, but it has been something we've been able to stand tall with, particularly against top six sides, you know, against your cities and whatnot. Very resolute in our shape, whole good structure there. Apparently the boys get drilled to death with that sort of gear at training. So you can see that. Unfortunately, Wolves picked it apart very easily on two occasions, scored two goals. But apart from that, not bad. I mean, I'm excited about the squad. I would say it's the best squad and depth we've had ever since I've been supporting Palace since 04 to now. There's genuine contention for all positions, which can only mean the guys we do put on the field are doing their level best to play well and keep their spot, keep the shirt. So good to see PVA back. Him going forward, is great. Mitchell probably doesn't have that in his locker just yet, but that will come with time. He's still a kid. And, yeah, I've said before, you know, I don't think Roy knows his best starting 11. I don't. But I think, too, I think it could well pay us to take a leaf out of Wolves' book from last season and have, you know, maybe 7, 8 generally key players in your starting 11. And depending on who you're playing, have your last sort of 3 or 4 on a horses for courses basis and roll them through like that. I think that could pay dividends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I 100% agree with you about the strongest squad we have going at the moment. What about you, Dale? How have you felt watching it? I mean, have you seen any changes? Is there anything you'd want to change? Kind of, how are you feeling?
Look, I think for me, first of all, the Brighton game, peak Palace living in Australia. I think it was 1:45 in the morning when they scored the equaliser. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, it's just annoying. Otherwise, I'll just say this. The difference having, as Ned pointed out, having an Eze, however we're pronouncing it, in that team is unreal. The kid clearly has a lot of class about him. We saw it. I don't know if anyone's seen the 4-minute clip the club has put together about all his touches. Brilliant. But I actually said to some mates of mine, non-Palace fans, I said, he is going to be Jack Grealish. His ability to pick up the ball and link defence to attack is unreal. And then one of my mates who's bigger into stats than Ned will ever be, has this comparison thing. He put the play, he put Eze and Grealish in there. Eze doesn't have the end product yet. I mean, that's fine. He's only got 387 minutes worth of football under his belt in the Premier League, something like that. But what he did have, and he was right up there with Grealish, is his completed dribbles, beating players, all that sort of stuff. All those things you want in that player to actually pick up the ball and release the pressure. That's what he gives us. And I think going forward, we've had it a little bit this season from Townsend to take the pressure off Wilf. But having that extra player who can just take 2 defenders, 3 defenders away opens up the space for us. Leeds, look, let's be honest, Leeds basically played a 4-2-4 and they tried to press us high up the pitch. We were able to beat the press, which is actually quite unusual for us. We don't do very well at beating the press. We're good at counter-attacking. We're not great at beating the press. We did. That's what opened up the game for us. And I think, as Ned said, they played the perfect style for us. We know when we come up against a Burnley, it is going to be a slugfest. There's 2 teams who are ultimately going to sit back and not do anything. Whatever. We'll deal with that when we get to it. But for me, moving forward, we said we don't know what, if Roy knows what his best team is. His best team has to have Eze, it has to have Wilfred Zaha, and it probably at the moment has to have Andrews Townsend, because with those players and that work rate, it stretches the field back and forth. And it's hard for me to say about Townsend, because I'd said at the end of last season, I don't know what he brings to the team, but I think he's turned it around, he's playing very well, I'm happy to admit that. So, look, I think Roy, whether he's actually change something, I don't know. Whether the teams we played against has suited us, most likely. For me, I'd still like to see one change, and that is I would like to see Eze playing as a genuine number 10. There was times when they made the substitutions at the weekend, and I thought it was crying out just to put Eze in 10 and Wilf up top on his own. I thought that would just, for me, that will be us complete, I think. I mean, we'd be all around that.
I agree. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything that's been said there. Most of things, almost everything. But I've noticed a couple of things, I'd say. So the pressing against Leeds was much more intense, and against Leeds we were obviously flooding the box a lot more. If you go back to Brighton, plenty of times when even if we did attempt to attack, there was no one getting the box with Will. It was like, well, go on, Will, if you try and do it. And I'm going to kind of defend Batshuayi here a little bit. So I know he scored three offside goals, but he scored those goals, apart from the Fulham game. Let's put the Fulham game on its own, but he did it against Wolves when he was a touch offside, and against Brighton. Now, both those games, for a striker, we don't create hundreds of chances, right? So he's offside for his one chance he gets. Whereas if we are against Leeds, for example, where we created a hatful of chances, he might have been offside once, but, you know, he might have been onside for six more. So I think it's a bit harsh. Everyone's saying he's always offside. He's always offside. He's been offside a couple of times because we haven't created that much for him as well.
One thing about Leeds, and this is what I don't want everyone to get carried away about, is the reality is we scored an own goal. Dan wasn't a goal, it was an own goal. And the goalkeeper was in an odd position. Eze's free kick was brilliant. Great free kick. And it was a free kick, but, you know, you can't rely on a free kick every week. The third goal's PBA. Massive deflection. And again, what
a... awful goalkeeper.
I mean, the first one, he started behind the line. So I don't know how he ever thought he was going to save it. And the third one was appalling. And yet, the fourth goal was superb. Well worked. Brilliant. So I just worry a little bit that even though it worked out for us, we won 4-1, on another day, we only really create one real chance and one decent goal-scoring chance, and it looks a bit, it's a different result. So I just want to temper that a little bit of the Leeds result, in my opinion.
And let's also not beat around the bush. Leeds are a newly promoted club. I don't care how big they think they are. They're a newly promoted club. They're not Leeds of 2002, you know, Champions League semi-finalists or whatever it was. They're a newly promoted club. So I think you sort of
have... They're basically playing a championship team still. Let's be honest.
100%.
I agree with everything there, right? So I don't want to get too carried away by the Fulham and Leeds wins, good wins as they are, but some people have gone on like, you know, we're back, we're gonna come top six or whatever. But yeah, they were, and you made it some really good points there. The other thing I was like slightly disappointed with, going back to the Wolves game, is, so for example, Ait Nouri, so his kid's debut, what is 19, 20? Clark, don't get me wrong, he is class going forward. We tested him once defensively and he should have given away a penalty. It was a penalty, everyone knows it was a penalty. We tested him once. We didn't bother going at him again. Not once did we then try and flood his wing or get Wilf over there or try and put pressure on him. We didn't do it at all. And so, like, but I mean, and that was the game plan, like, not to flood people forward. And we're losing 2-0. Like, stuff like that really frustrates me.
I want to say that's not a Roy problem. That is something that has been there since before Roy. The amount of times we've seen a winger or fullback get a yellow card, and then our most creative player, generally Wilf, doesn't then run at that player again in the entire game. I've lost
count. My head in.
That's not a Roy issue. I think that is just... You actually see it like in football as a whole. So I just think sometimes footballers just don't see it. Don't think
It is a Roy thing. I'm sorry, it is a player thing. But I mean, it's also, I think, a Roy thing, is that you look, I mean, if I'm the manager and I know that there's a 19-year-old kid starting for the first time in the Premier League, I do not let him just get not attack him. I get right at him. I'm like, we're going to go at that guy. That's the first. If he turns out to be absolutely fantastic, if he turns out to be like Wan-Bissaka, for example, hands up, he was brilliant. But we didn't. And the one time he got tested defensively, he failed. Well, he should have failed. We got done for that. Yeah. So that frustrated me. But, you know, look, if, when it all comes down to it, we've got 7 points out of 12. The tactics frustrate the shit out of me, if I'm going to be honest with you. But, you know, when they work, they work. So I can't really, we can't really complain too much. We're sitting pretty now. All right. So obviously we're sitting pretty in around about eighth place. So we've had a good start to the season. A couple of players have really stood out. So who for you guys has really stood out the most and impressed you for the early part of this season? Let's start with Dale for this one. Which one give me some players for you that stood out as, you know, taking Palace forward.
Very quickly, Cheku Kiyote playing centre back, played there for Senegal, yes, but it's a centre mid. Props to him. There's the odd mistake. It hasn't been overly catastrophic apart from Man United. So tick. Yarrow Rydereld, we've said for a long time as a club, as fans, he needs to be given more of a go. He had that spell with Christmas and then got dropped. I think he's showing his class. Frank de Boer, well done. He got something right. In line for a Dutch call up at some stage. And then the other one's Wilf. You know, you can't dispute the fact he's banging his goals. Probably hasn't been as effective as he has been in the past with regards to his wide play, but you know, he's not playing as a winger anymore, which is a bit odd. The only thing I'd say about those three players, are they all playing out of position? ? Interesting. Anyway, yeah, that's for me. Those are the players for me.
I think they're probably the players that everyone's going to talk about, but let's see if there's any difference from Ned. Any ones that you'd say to know that impressed you?
Look, I think as we all said at the start of the season, this is going to be Greedewald's sort of breakout season, hopefully, and it looks like that is going to be the case. So, I mean, which is obviously really, really good to see. Still has the best hair in the league as well, which I know is very important to both Mark and Rob. So it's good that he's representing on that front too. I think, yeah, in terms of everyone else, I mean, you've got to talk about Wilf because, as I say, like his return this year has been fantastic. He started putting the ball in the back of the net more and sort of having a bit more of an end product, which is sort of one of the things that he's always been criticised about. So, I mean, you've got to give props to him for that. But yeah, I think everyone else around the pitch has just been solid, which I think has been good, with the exception of 45 minutes from Mamadou Sakho. I think you have to sit there, I mean, even... and say that most players for most parts of the season, I don't think you're sitting there going, there have been players who have been consistently shit. And I think it comes down to Mark's point earlier of, you know, there being that competition for spots in the squad, which means that, you know, as much as people might like to say, oh, Roy doesn't like making changes and so on, whether that pressure is real or whether it's perceived, everyone seems to be sort of lifting a bit. But yeah, I think Gyro's got to be your standout in terms of, you know, people that we didn't quite expect to see there if you sort of looked at this time last year. But yeah, I mean, that's probably my take on it.
Yep. Marky Mark?
Yeah, well, players that stood out, which I've been banging on about every pod this season, Jordan Ayew, who I tipped to fall off a cliff and did exactly that, saved, saved a bit of faith on the weekend and banged one in with a lovely ball from Wilf on the weekend. But stand out in a good way. Yeah, the obvious, you know, Gyro, Eze, and, you know, the forgotten in defence of Kiyote, who's, I guess, any good defender doing the job, never going to get that much of a mention. But... he's been absolutely solid and resolute in defence there, which he plays for his national side, I do believe. And yeah, you know, going along with that theme of squad depth at the moment, you know, we got a guy who's a striker for the number one ranked team in the world on our bench at the moment. So that, in a snapshot, kind of illustrates where we're at with our squad depth and talent that we have in the wings, which means any guy on the park, there's just no room for dicking around or taking your shirt for granted because you just can't. So they would know that themselves, being professional footballers, and a bit of that's going to come from Roy as well. But yeah, just to bang the same drum, it's Gyro for me. Obviously, the hair ropes me in initially, and his silky skills keep me watching after that. And it shouldn't be that much of a surprise because you go back to that New Year's Eve game against City, and he was the man that day. And by all accounts, you know, that's never kind of gone away. He stayed professional in training, always kept himself fit, never pops his bottom lip out and carries on like a tit, you know. He's always there ready to put his hand up for the boss. And, you know, he's starting to really do that with aplomb this season, and long may it continue.
Yep, it's fairly unanimous here. I would also say Guait has also looked pretty good. Obviously, some stunning saves against Southampton early part, and he's just solid. He just exudes that confidence that we need behind the back four there, considering that back four has changed pretty much every week this season. Question then, going on from that, I'm going to throw at you, and Dale, I've just noticed that you're repping the Sixers. Good stuff. when Joel Ward and Tyreek Mitchell are back, and I reckon your probably answers may well have changed in the past 2 weeks, do they come straight back into the team, or do Klein and PVA have the shirt now? What do you think? Go, Dale. What do you reckon?
You have the shirt. Simple. You have the shirt. Yeah. PVA is the senior left back. As good as Mitchell's been, well done. Congratulations. Now sit back down and wait your turn again. PVA. Everyone knows I'm not the biggest PBA fan, but we're better with him because he gives us that going forward. And Joel Ward, look, you can't knock Joel Ward. Great servant to the club. Did his, you know, sat down when Aaron Wan-Bissaka came through, etc., etc. Is he the best right back going around? No. Is he the best right back we have at the moment? Arguably not if Klein gets himself fit. So yeah, that's my idea. Just quickly on Wilf, I just wanted to say, I wonder what's gone on in his head this year. Is it, I'm 28, or just turned 28, I'm probably now not going to get that move to a top six club or a European powerhouse. So if I want European football, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and drag this club there. Or is he thinking, I've just turned 28, this is my last chance. I have to really roll up my sleeves and show people what I can do. I don't know. I don't care. Just keep on doing it, Wilf. Simple things.
Who knows, mate? Who knows? Let's hope it's the former. He's going nowhere and he's taking us on a European bloody tour. All right, go on, Mark. Would you say that PVA and Kleinie have the shirts now, or are you like the boys that had them come back in because they were doing very well before they went out?
Half of that is probably easier for me to answer on the left, on PVA side. I say he walks back into the side, all things being equal and fit. Well done to Mitchell. He didn't disgrace himself at all and took the opportunity with both hands, you know, did what he had to do. But I think for the sake of the go forward factor and being, you know, as Dale said, the senior guy, I think he gets his shirt back when fit. You know, he's got a long time in football to go. So, mate, for his age, probably be thankful for the run and, you know, just stay hot on PVA's heels, and you never know what's around the corner. With Wardy, yeah, I mean, you know, little Aussie Battler recipient, very hard for me to give him the chop. Klein, you know, club favourite from way back when, you know, a favourite son. Still definitely do a job for us. I think Ward's been very professional in the last couple of seasons himself, as you say, with Juan Vasaka coming through, and that would have been a bit of pill for him to swallow. But again, he just kept on doing what he had to do at training and on the park. And yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously he's injured, so it's an easy decision for Roy to make. And if anything, I would have thought Klein's match fitness might have been coming back a little bit quicker than what it is tracking. I know he hadn't played in quite some time, so I guess maybe that is the telling factor. But look, mate, all things being equal, I'm throwing Wardy the shirt.
Okay. What about you, Neddy?
I'm sort of in a similar boat to Mark. I think my opinion on Tyrick Mitchell has been pretty consistent right through. I think he's an excellent prospect. I think he's very good defensively. But he's not Aaron Wan-Bissaka. He's not that player. He is going to be an excellent footballer. He's going to be an excellent left back, but he's not going to be the player that can make a difference in the way that PVA can, particularly going forward. I think in terms of our team, and Rob knows this better than most, we tend to sit back and lack outlets going forward. So I think if we have an outlet, if we have a choice between a left back who can give us one of very few outlets going forward, or a left back who can't, then for me that's a bit of a no-brainer. And that's no diss on Tyrick Mitchell. It's just a case of PVA gives us more in that area. On the other side, I think, look, it's just got to be who is, you know, in better form or who is better at training. And I think there's not a lot between the two at this point. I mean, if Klein's got the shirt and we're winning games, then he keeps it. If Klein makes a mistake or two, then Ward would come straight back in. And I don't think we're sort of losing or gaining lots and lots either way at this point. Which, I mean, is probably a good problem to have, because it means that if you do get an injury in that area, you're all set and your team's not really sort of going to be hit that hard. But yeah, I think it's absolutely no brainer that we're a better side with PVA in it, even if he can't pass. Even without being able to pass or defend as a left back, we're a better side with him in it. Which sounds like a ridiculous statement, but anyone who's watched this play, I think, has to probably acknowledge that.
Good arguments for all. I quite like because of it's very much defence first with Roy. I quite like the fact that Klein and PVA are both very attack minded, so I would keep them both in as well. I think Klein offers you more defensively too. PVA scares the shite out of me every time they go forward. Another team goes forward, to be honest with you. I mean, it hasn't been picked up, but having it in against the Leeds game, go back and watch it at some point. I think it was in the second half. The ball just comes across into the box. It's up in the air for ages. And literally PVA stands there, watches the ball land on the foot of the bloke that goes for a volley. And as the guy's about to shoot, he then runs to him. I'm just like, what are you doing? So he scares the crap out of me, but what he brings going forward, I mean, that's fairly priceless. He's probably arguably the best in the league at going defensive, like a left back going forward, arguably the worst in defensively. So I'd say, yeah, they probably both keep the shirt. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Nathan Ferguson can do as well as and when he turns up. So, right, so those four games are done. Next four games, let's look forward to that. So we've got Burnley in a couple of weeks' time. Then we've got away. Then we've got Newcastle home, West Brom away, and then we've got Spurs at home. Now, obviously, we're losing 1-0 to Spurs because that's what happens. Let's look at these next four fixtures. The next three are quite nice. What are we hoping? What are we expecting? And what are we hoping for out of them? Let's go to Mark first. So you've got Burnley away, Newcastle home, West Brom away, Spurs at home.
Oh, you said it perfectly. It was Spurs. I didn't really delve into that doing my show notes. So yeah, 1-0. Kane in the 88th minute. Maybe Son.
There you go.
Probably Kane.
Yep. Yep.
Show notes. What a toss up.
The other three, mate, I expect and hope for the same thing. 3 wins and 9 points. Particularly with how we're playing, where they are on the ladder. We're playing, 12th or 13th, 18th and 19th. Collectively, a goal difference of minus 23 after 8 rounds. We're sitting on 0, level pegging. You know, these 9 points are got to be had. You know, at worst, 7. But, you know, I'm really thinking 9. Two of those matches are away. So that's right up our alley. Think, you know, they're not Burnley, a very dour, as are West Brom. Newcastle, yeah, they could, you know, pop up and do something. I think I've got those, is it the team that's got those couple of brothers that play for them that are quite handy? Is that Newcastle?
Yeah,
Longstaff.
So, you know, who knows with them, but I'm absolutely expecting 9 points. Plain and simple.
9 points, eh? Right. Dale, what do you reckon?
I think there's going to be some stodgy, horrible football. And that's not a blight on us. It is a part blight on us, but Burnley are not going to be expansive. West Brom are not going to be expansive. Newcastle, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from them. Spurs will be Spurs. I want to say 9 points. I've got a feeling it will be 4-6, and I'll be happy with that.
Yep. Ned?
I'm just going to do Rob's editorial for the Burnley game in advance, which I think everyone's going to agree with. That game is going to arguably be one of the worst games of football ever seen by humanity. I'm hoping we can just pull a sketchy 1-0 in the, you know, at some point, and then just have two teams that just leave the ball in the centre circle while they stand back on the edge of their own 18-yard box for the sort of remaining 89 minutes. Burnley are just, yeah. I mean, Rob, you complain about watching us. Just be glad you're not a Burnley fan, mate. Because they're boring and shit. At least we win some games. I think that Burnley game is one that, I mean, it's just that West Brom have leaked a lot of goals. I think that's one that we definitely should be able to get something out of. They're not going to be expansive, but I think they do attack enough that we can go back at them. Newcastle's an interesting one. That's a tough game, I think. But we've been getting results against those teams around us. So I'm hoping we can get something there. And Spurs, I mean, just because I like getting stuck into Rob, I believe the direct quote was, "Mourinho and Spurs are a match made in hell," was the quote from Rob Seltzer last year.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was. I can confirm that. I still believe it.
So. Okay, all right.
Better in the archives.
Yeah, all right. I don't know how accurate that's going to be. I would almost put them as a genuine title contender. That's going to be a very tough game. But because I said that's going to be a very tough game, obviously we'll win Spurs and lose the other three, which would be the standard Palace thing to do. But I think I'm with Dale in terms of 9 would be ideal. I think 6 is what we'll get. I would be very happy if we did get those 6, and I am going to predict that they're not going to come in the games that we would expect them to come in.
I think we're going to get another 7. I'm going to go for the same lot again. I think we'll lose the obvious one. We'll lose the Spurs, as Marky said, Kane 88. I 100% agree, Ned. Burnley's one for the pay-per-view, I reckon. Just stick it on pay-per-view so no one has to watch it. Because that's going to be
charged twice as much.
But I mean, I'd be delighted. I'd be over the moon if we get 9. But I mean, I I think we'll probably get seven, and that will put us nicely on that 20-point mark before Christmas. And then we've got some tasty fixtures coming up there too. So definitely take the 7 points. We'll do very nicely. Now, coming towards the end, so look, I'm going to hand over to our Aussies. So Riley McGree scored for Birmingham a couple of weeks ago. Saw that. Also, I saw the highlights this week, and he was the one that gave the ball away for whoever Birmingham were playing to score. So, no mixed bag.
One all.
But, anything happening in the world, in the Aussie world of football, man?
I stole your thunder last time, Mark, so I'll let you have it, mate.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Yeah, so, a few things going on. Our under 23 national side actually playing Sydney FC tonight in some suburban park somewhere, so that's interesting, but I didn't really make notes about that. Last time I did mention we had Hayley Rasso, ex-Brisbane Roar girl, playing for Everton, was in the FA Cup final. Unfortunately, they lost, did manage to win her side a penalty in that game. But yeah, I think I lost 1-0, so that's a bit of a shame for Hayley there. Ellie Carpenter during the week is the first woman named in the AFC Player of the Week. So as I read that, that's including men and women. So for our whole Asian Confederation, that's a lot of people. She got Player of the Week. So nods to her, nods to Ellie. She's someone I've been following her career for quite a bit and is up there with Ash Barty and Elise Perry on my podium of sporting identities that I like to follow. That's about as clean as I can make that statement. Sam Kerr, Aussie Sam Kerr, playing a trade for Chelsea now. She's been named in the top 50 footballers throughout the world. Came in at number 11, so she's in the starting side. Doing great things over there for Chelsea. Alana Kennedy, I don't know if you saw her. Oh, this is about a week or 10 days ago. Kicked an absolute worldie free kick, Jedinak-like, from about 25, 30 yards. Absolute belter. Get on YouTube, have a look at that if you can. Emily Van Egmond got the winner for West Ham during the week against Birmingham. She's now scored 3 goals in 3 games. Another Brizzy girl, Emily Gilnick, scored 3 goals and 1 assist in their 4-0 drubbing. She plays for Vitsjos, excuse my pronunciation, and they were playing KIF Orebro DFF. Don't know what that all means, but Norway.
Oh, you're just making it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's a fucking three goals and assist in a game, absolutely lighting it up over there. And yeah, she's just re-signed for the Brisbane Roar, so she's coming back this season for the W League. Love watching her go around for the Matildas, so I'll enjoy watching her go around in the orange and black this coming season. Tommy Rodgick back on the pitch for Celtic, 5 assists in 5 games, thus concluding my Aussie wrap. Over to you, Ned.
Well, I mean, that's very comprehensive. The only bits I will add, and so the probably would have been better if you hadn't mentioned the Ollie Roos game against Sydney FC tonight. they got done 3-0. although I should clarify that half the Ollie Roos players weren't actually allowed into the state of New South Wales to play the game without doing a 14-day quarantine. So half of them were actually just the Sydney FC reserves. The other one that I will mention is obviously got the Asian Champions League coming up. Melbourne Victory signed a few players, including an ex-Palace player, into the A-League, who no one will realise is an ex-Palace player because he played about 3 times about 10 years ago. Jacob Butterfield, not Danny Butterfield. We signed Jacob Butterfield and also Callum McManaman in a just fully League One standard British takeover of Melbourne Victory. So, FA Cup winner when though? Remind me again.
2013, maybe.
Well, I mean, look, it's less than a decade. We'll take it.
I'm guessing.
What's happening. So, if anyone is missing their League One football and wants to get some Australian equivalents, that's where to go. And well done, Dale, who's very proud of himself for getting the correct year that Callum McManaman won the FA Cup, which counts as our quiz for this week. So congratulations, Dale. All points to you.
Do you want to quickly inform everyone of the breaking news? I'm sure they'll have known it by when they listen to this, but as breaking news as we're on air, first time ever in XL Eagle history.
Luka Milivojevic has COVID. Failed 2 tests Monday and Tuesday.
You heard it here first, which come out in about 4 days.
Yeah, you heard it here first, but not... You heard it here first 3 days after the fact. Done.
Yeah, so... That's it. My only question with that is, it was Monday, he was probably contagious for a couple of days before that. When was he last with the squad? Who knows? What does this mean? I have no idea. That's our third COVID positive player, so interesting.
I think our main concern is that it doesn't get to Roy, to be honest.
Well,
on a genuinely serious note.
You can guess, but it's very true.
That is a very, very good point. You certainly don't want Roy to be anywhere near that. So, fingers crossed he's not. Fingers crossed he's not. That, as we all know, the quiz is never over until I ask a question. So, what Aussie player am I thinking of?
Carl Burt.
Now, Dale wins. Well done, again. Dale. The quiz for this week, which just leads me to say, really, thank you all very much for joining me again today. We'll probably reconvene after the next 4 games or something like that before the Christmas rush. We have enjoyed having no Palace this weekend to complain about, but even more so, get excited for the Burnley game because that's going to be a cracker.
Cannot wait.
That's it. Well, fellas, that's Mark, Ned, Dale, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And up the Palace.
Cheers, mate.
Good judges believe that if you want to play with the big boys, you have to have the bench to back it up. For the first time in many seasons, Palace is approaching the chaos of the Xmas draw with a squad that has not been depleted by a string of injuries in key positions. With a bench full of current and past internationals, I cannot recall a period where we were justified to be optimistic about the future. Just the fact that Max Meyer on 130 per week missed the cut tells me this is a very strong all-round squad, competition for all spots. This has given Roy the license to play a more attacking style of football. This in itself is a very, very good thing and augurs well for our best season so far. Given that our next 3 games are winnable, I reckon we are a genuine top 6 contender.
Oh, fuck me. I'm negative towards one person and one person only. I'll have you know.
That's just not true. You're negative towards me. You're negative towards Roy. There's two.
Yeah, true. I can't argue that. You're a knob.